back on Lexington Community Radio. This is Bluegrass Bios. I'm joined by Lexington Sours in studio.
Mm-hmm, right here.
By Benjineer Ben Wolf in studio.
Hey, Kyle.
And we've got a special guest in studio, Elizabeth Perkins. She's an educator at Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky. How are you doing today, Elizabeth?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing really well. Thank you. So I want to ask you a little bit about what it is that you do with this organization.
Sure, yeah. So Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky, obviously, first and foremost, is a health center here in Lexington. My job is pretty focused on preventative education and sexuality education. So a lot of what I do right now just looks like teaching sexuality education in schools, with youth, in community organizations, with adults in community organizations, and at some colleges, too, I teach as well.
I took sex ed about a million years ago in my high school in Missouri, and I don't remember it being especially sophisticated. How has sex ed evolved in the last decade, let's say?
Oh, that's a good question. The history part, I am not an expert on, but I will say from folks that I've talked to, parents, for example, who have kids in the school system now, are shocked by how different sex ed looks for their kids as it did for them. You know, coming out of the 80s, we were very conscious of HIV and AIDS, and there was a lot of focus put into schools to do better sex education, and once those rates of HIV started going down a little bit, we kind of started slacking off nationally, right, with sex ed. And now a lot of Kentucky parents tell me that they had better sex ed than their kids do now, you know, 20 years ago. So.
And what are some of the bigger issues that you've seen, you know, when, you know, kind of the common questions, I guess, that you get as an educator?
Oh, I have some good ones. So I teach, whenever I teach, I always give space for anonymous questions, right? Because folks are much more likely to ask me questions about sensitive topics when they don't have to put their name on it, right? Or ask in front of their peers. So I get a lot of questions about puberty when I teach middle schoolers especially. Am I normal? You know, things like periods and semen and any kind of thing that you can think of. Am I normal? And I get a lot of questions about STDs. How can I get one? Can I get one if? Fill in the blank. I've heard everything. Can I get one in the water? Can I get one, you know, doing whatever sexual behavior with or without a condom? I get lots of questions about condoms. Lots of questions about birth control. I brought some of my favorites.
Sure, yeah, please.
Share.
Here a couple. Yeah. I like this one. Why do pimples have to be in puberty?
You know what? I want to know that too, actually. Hopefully we can get to the
I'm out of those woods. I'm out of those woods. Yeah, that's a pretty good question.
All right.
I mean, I can answer it for you.
Yes.
Yeah, so during puberty, your sweat glands get overactivated, right? That is part of the hormonal changes that we're going through during puberty. So once those sweat glands get overactivated, the sweat interacts with bacteria that's already on your skin, and it causes pimples, right? So this disproportionately affects folks in puberty because they are sweating more because their sweat glands are overactivated. So that's the answer.
Good to know.
What are some of the other questions they've given you? That...
Does Mountain Dew destroy sperm cells?
Huh.
I'm going to go out on a limb with that.
I'm just wondering where how that started. You know, that kind of sounds like Pop Rocks. Does that explode your stomach? Is this similar?
This is a myth that is really common, actually. A lot of high school students ask this question.
Is it the caffeine and the
You know, it's
sugar?
Specifically Mountain Dew. It's no other...
The dye?
I don't know why kids think that Mountain Dew will kill sperm cells. It is not...
Mountain Dew is not a contraceptive.
No,
is what you're saying.
Well,
I don't want to put words in your mouth.
So the I mean, they think that it can be used as a douche, right? That will then kill sperm cells after sexual behavior. And obviously that is faulty logic. Probably is going to cause a pretty bad yeast infection, whoever is doing that.
Yeah.
An extreme yeast infection.
Extreme yeast infection. And, you know, it's, you know, pushing anything with douching after vaginal sex is going to push sperm further into the uterus, and you're just giving sperm a free ride, basically.
Well, as silly as that question kind of seems on the surface, boy, am I glad they asked, because, you know, I think it's good that you offer that sort of anonymity to a lot of those questions, especially for preteens and teenagers. Is that your primary focus on youth programs?
It has been so far. You know, we have the eighth highest teen pregnancy rate in the country, mm-hmm. so that is a pretty big focus area for Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky in Lexington and in Louisville as well. Those are the two places where we have educators in the state. Mm-hmm. And half of young people under the age of 25 will get an STD at some point in their lives. So it's one in every two, which is pretty crazy.
That is, what's most prevalent? Would that be like HPV or something like that? Or is it, I'm hoping, not something really serious?
Chlamydia and gonorrhea are probably the biggest offenders. And then HPV obviously is kind of its own animal. It's very, most people have HPV, so it's hard to know if someone has it or not. And there's not a lot of tests for it, especially in men. But we know for sure gonorrhea and chlamydia are the two leading STDs that young folks are getting. HIV also is kind of creeping up there. We're seeing a lot more new cases of young folks with HIV who don't know because they haven't been tested.
Doesn't it take a while for HIV to show up in your system after you've contracted it? So the most common symptom really is no symptoms?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, that's true of chlamydia as well and gonorrhea as well. But HIV specifically, there can be sometimes like flu-like symptoms, like maybe within a month after exposure, but who's going to think, oh, I must have HIV,
And was it 9 months, 8 months, something like that?
It could be anywhere from a year to 10 years. Depends. It just depends on the body and the infection.
And let's see, do you have programs for older people as well? Not just younger people, because that seems to be a sort of demographic where STDs are really on the rise, is with people like over the age of 60.
Yeah, after teens and young people under the age of 25, that is the next age group for folks who are contracting STDs. But I don't currently have programs like that. I know our educator Lafayette, Indiana, she is doing some stuff with folks who are older about STD prevention.
And why is sex education so important for the public? And I know we were talking a little bit off air of sex education versus like abstinence only programs. Why it may seem obvious to me. Why is more education better than no education? Can you
tell me that? Great question. Yeah. Thank you. So. I think I usually start when I talk about sexuality, when I go into a new program, like talking about how sexuality is kind of this huge part of being a human that we just don't talk about a lot. And so when we do talk about it, it makes us really awkward and uncomfortable. And so people tend to avoid talking about things that make them uncomfortable or feel awkward. So comprehensive sexuality education is pretty focused on the looking at sexuality as this holistic thing, right? So sex ed is not just about sexual behavior. When we're talking about comprehensive sexuality education, it's abstinence and sexual decision making, it's body image, contraception, gender, sexual identity, human development, reproduction, pregnancy, relationships, preventing STDs, safer sex, sexual attitudes. It's a long, long list, right? All of this stuff has to do with sexuality. Whereas Students only education, which is what a lot of Kentucky schools do, is pretty focused on promoting abstinence from sexual behavior and not getting into too much else. So they really exclude discussion of other topics that are really important, like how to use a condom, how to protect yourself if you decide to engage in sexual behavior. It's important to talk to kids about sexual decision making. Obviously, it's really important. Half of Kentucky high school students have had sex. So that's not going to help those students who have decided to have sex to prevent this, to help us get this teen pregnancy rate down, and to help us prevent STDs in our young people. Actually, one school where I teach, one middle school where I teach also invites a crisis pregnancy center. If you're familiar with that term, it's a basically a crisis pregnancy center is kind of like a fake clinic that counsels women to who are pregnant to not have abortions. And they also do a lot of, sometimes they do education in schools. So there's one CPC, we call them for short, that does abstinence only until marriage education in schools. And this school where I teach a lot, recently I had a health teacher call me and say that the facilitator told one of her students that he could not get tested for STDs, so he should not have sex, which isn't is faulty, right?
It's not reality, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, giving kids all these scary images of STDs and then telling them, but you can't get tested, so you better not even try it, right? It's not going to work, and it's going to scare them a lot. So these kind of scare tactics don't really make a big difference in terms of dissuading kids from having sex. What it does is dissuade them from protecting themselves.
All right, well, you're listening to 95.7 WLXL. We're here with Elizabeth Perkins. She's an educator at Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky. So there's SARFI.
Yeah.
Is that correct? What is that? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so SARFI is the name of our education department.
Okay.
Of Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky. So it stands for Sarah and Albert Rubin Partners in Health Education. So it's easier to say SARFI for short,
right?
This couple, Sarah and Albert Rubin, gave us a large donation about 10 years ago, I think. And that, so we took on their name as part of our, as our education department name. So that's what it is. We're the same thing.
Well, how did you get involved in this?
Well, I got a job at Planned Parenthood when I was right out of college and a few years ago. I worked at the Louisville Health Center at the front desk, and I did interpreting for Spanish-speaking patients there in the clinic. And I didn't really know a lot about Planned Parenthood. You know, having studied women's studies in school, in college, I was, you know, on board, and I thought they were great. But when I started working there, I just really felt that this was the kind of work I wanted to do. I feel really strongly about it. I care a lot about it, and really, you know, talking about sexuality every day kind of, you know, pushes me as a human to reanalyze my own opinions and beliefs and attitudes too. So,
well, while you mentioned it, are there Spanish speaking translators at each of your facilities, or are there classes and educational programs in Spanish?
Great question. So I started this position about less than a year ago. It was last summer.
Okay.
So I speak Spanish, and I would love to do Spanish-speaking programming. I have not done any Spanish-speaking programming yet. Mm-hmm. It is on my to-do list. So if any of our listeners have groups that they would like to invite me to come talk with, I would be happy to. But I, in our health centers, we do have interpreting lines. So if a patient comes in who doesn't speak English as a first language, we would use the interpreter line.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And do you have classes or events where parents and children can attend those together, and parents can be, you know, and maybe some of them would like to be in the room, or things of that nature? Do you offer that as well?
At the moment, we I don't do programs like that, but we have done them in the past.
Okay.
We did a mother-daughter retreat a few years ago that was it went pretty well. But like I said, I don't think I said this yet, but I'm responsible for education in all of Central Kentucky as the Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky educator, and I'm just one person. So I would like to do lots more education. I'm looking at ways that we can do kind of more, something more sustainable, maybe like a peer education program or something like that.
Okay, and I think most people just assume Planned Parenthood is just for women, or is there anything for men that you offer as well? And materials, classes, anything like that?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, in terms of education, I teach in mixed gender classrooms all the time. Mm-hmm. Separating kids when you talk about sexuality just makes them more awkward with each other when they have to talk about it, you know, in their personal relationships. But in terms of our health center services, yes, we definitely offer services to men. I think I'm going to add to that, though. I think a lot of folks think that Planned Parenthood is just for straight women, women who can get pregnant, and that's not true at all. So we will see patients who need health care, right? Mm-hmm. So we all have sexual health needs.
And it's not just for prevention. You also help women and fathers who are currently parents. And do you have any parental teaching classes of anything like that?
I do teach folks who are parenting, but I don't specifically teach parenting classes.
Okay.
So, for example, the way that I generally do programming is that someone invites me because they see a need in the group that they're working with for some kind of education, and they'll invite me to come and speak. And then usually in those scenarios, I'm talking to mothers or fathers, and that's usually, it's not specifically for parenting. Although I do teach sexuality education at Family Care Center's Parent Education Program, which is specifically for parenting and pregnant teens.
Okay. But it's not that some people just have, if I'm not a teenage girl, then I don't need Planned Parenthood or a young person. So it's really for anyone who needs
anyone who
help
needs it.
And yep. education and sure. services.
Yeah. So, and we see patients without insurance, which is a big help for folks who aren't covered.
Oh, yeah.
And also, we do take insurance. We take Medicaid.
That was my next Medicaid and Medicare. If you accepted that?
Yeah. So we try to keep our doors open to whoever needs us, basically.
And let's see, are you on Facebook, or do you have a social media presence?
Yeah, we definitely do. Our Facebook, if you just type in Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky, it'll come up. This should be the first one there. We also have a couple other things. You can follow us on Twitter, which is PPIND Kentucky. And then we have some education-specific things. We have an Instagram account called Safe Sexperts, so that is pretty fun. Mm-hmm. And then our blog is actually a pretty useful tool.
So tell me more about that. Do you have like an open forum for questions for people, or?
We mostly post things there that are focused on some specific topic, usually like a specific event or a specific theme of a month, like Cervical Cancer Awareness Month was in February. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
it was a long time ago. It was a different season.
Exactly. It's spring now. Mm-hmm. So I know that we posted specifically about Cervical Cancer Awareness Month that month. So a lot of our stuff is kind of revolves around different events and things. But that website is sarphe.wordpress.com.
So talking about sex and sexuality can sometimes be awkward. Is there a way that people can reach you or reach Planned Parenthood in a more anonymous or a more private way so they're not tweeting their personal question out?
Oh, yeah. Well, if people have specific health education questions, specific health questions, obviously I would encourage them to talk to a nurse or a doctor about that. But if they have general kind of sexuality questions that aren't necessarily medical, we do have an anonymous text line. And the anonymous text line is, it's specifically for young people, but I mean, we won't know if you're not a young person, so it's anonymous. You know, we do have to report it if, because it's for young people, we have to report if someone says that they are being hurt or if are hurting someone else. But that text line is 502-354-8336.
Maybe one more time.
502-354-8336. So our Louisville educator answers those texts.
We're on Bluegrass Bios with Elizabeth Perkins. She's an educator at Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky. You can get more information at ppink.org. That stands for Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky. Or call 859-252-8494. And again, that anonymous text line is 502-354-8336. Now, this might be a little bit outside of your purview. Maybe it's not, Elizabeth, but when I hear something like middle schoolers are using soft drinks as you know, personal hygiene tools, that sort of makes me want to shake their parents by the shoulders. And I sort of wonder, like, you know, how does you know, when you have to step in, you know, it almost seems like it's too late. You know what I mean? Like, how much of this stuff do you feel like should be happening in the home?
Oh, 100% it should be happening at home. Ideally, parents talk to their kids about this stuff all the time. As a child, we're always learning about sexuality from our families. You know, from infancy, we're learning about touch and sensuality, and we're learning about our parents' relationships, right? Or whether that be romantic relationships or other relationships. And so all of that stuff has to do with sexuality. And when we don't talk about it in the home, that creates a lot of shame, right, around these topics. And then in school, when we just say, just don't do it, wait till you're married, that's another area where we're creating more shame, right, about it. And then we grow into adults who don't know how to talk about this stuff.
And the cycle continues.
Exactly. It is a vicious cycle. So yeah, I mean, I agree. I definitely would love to see more of this stuff happening in the home. And every now and then I'll come across that one kid in the class whose parents talk to them about this stuff, and they're like, that's sexist. I'm like, what? Thanks. Okay, what's sexism? Let's explain it to your classmates. Or they, you know, they know about, you know, they know what LGBTQ stands for example. So these are few and far between, unfortunately. And that puts a lot of pressure on the schools to do the pregnancy prevention and STD prevention. And actually, the Kennedy School of Government, the Kaiser Family Foundation, and National Public Radio found that over 90% of parents of middle and high school students think it is pretty important to have sexuality education in schools, which is, and 90% is a lot. It's a lot of parents who would like to see that being taught in schools, but we're not teaching it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, because they, you know, they would rather have that sort of, like, you know, it's sort of passing the buck in a way, right? You know, and even in the schools, and this is sort of why I was wondering if you wanted to get into, is how does legislation affect that kind of stuff? I mean, at Planned Parenthood, you guys can be sort of persona non grata in a Bible belt state like this, right?
Yeah, totally. I am not up to date, like, on the current legislation right now, but I do know a little bit. We are working pretty hard in Jefferson County right now to get guidelines for county schools to be able to teach sexuality education in a more holistic, like, comprehensive way. There are basically no guidelines right now. I think there's two things that count as guidelines for how to teach sexuality education. So you have a health teacher in one room who is talking about condoms and talking about sexuality, you know, and prevention in a pretty open way. And then you have the health teacher in the next room who can't even say the word condom. And so that's a pretty drastic difference depending on the luck of the draw. Some kids are getting a good sexuality education and most of them aren't, especially if they don't get they don't get supported by their administration, right? The way that I'm invited into schools is by the health teachers who want me there. The, you know, the sometimes the administration is supportive, but it's really the teachers is taking it upon themselves to say this is something that we need in health class. So, and that doesn't give a lot of support for folks who want to make sure that kids get that.
You mentioned there's always that one student who knows, you know, what
not
sex
always,
is.
I would just say.
Not always.
There are few and far between.
But how have you seen specifically LGBTQ issues change in the classroom? Are students being more receptive to it? Are they kind of stuck in their ways?
That's a great question, actually. So I do try to teach a segment or a session specifically about sexual identity. We all have a sexual identity. What is a sexual identity made of? You know, talking about what's sexual orientation, what's gender identity. And kids, I mean, middle schoolers especially love talking about that stuff, even though it makes them super uncomfortable. They have so many questions because they see it on TV, you know, and maybe they don't talk about it at home. But also, I was so surprised, you know, going into middle schools and still hearing the same bullying jokes that I would hear when I was in middle school. I was like, surely we must have evolved a little bit. But no, you know, there's still, if you're touching the color blue today, you're gay. Oh, he's gay, you're gay. And it's like, all right, so how is that a problem? How is that going to make someone feel who is gay in your class? And when we really break it down and look at it, I think a lot of kids, it clicks for them, but some kids are, you know, just never going to listen. But I think it makes it, and it does make a difference for those folks in the room who are LGBTQ, right? And who maybe haven't found a way to define that yet, or have been defining it for years, right? So I think that is a really important lesson, and you have to talk about bullying when you talk about LGBTQ issues of sexual identity.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I guess if they don't have you guys as, if they're not taught about this stuff, then you're leaving it up to the internet and maybe celebrities to teach them about some of this stuff.
Oh, I get questions about porn all the time.
Oh, really?
Yes. What is porn? Why do people like porn?
Those are two very good questions.
Well,
the first one especially.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have this like Hollywood version of what sex is supposed to look like. Mm. And I saw one writer give this great metaphor. I can't remember his name. Basically, porn is like an ESPN like highlights reel where, you know, all you see is like the slam dunks and the beautiful touchdowns, right? And that's what porn is like. It's just like these really glamorous moments where that's not what people generally appreciate about sex. You know, people appreciate the intimacy a lot more.
Yeah.
And like the moments that are not going to look good on the ESPN sports reel, right? And it's hard to explain that to kids because that's their main resource for learning about sex. Because no one's talking to them about it.
Yeah, well, and like, you know, there's a part there that is important. That's, you know, those ESPN top tens. They're not showing, you know, to extend the analogy, the practice that those players are putting in. You know what
also,
I mean? Like,
yes.
Like, so how much do you have to talk about? And I mean this in a relationship way, right?
Yeah.
Like, how much do you have to explain, like, you know, just the emotional part of relationships, right? Like, what love is and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I do. I try to squeeze in as much as possible in a realistic amount of, you know, a realistic amount in a little bit of time. And healthy relationships has to be included because we don't, unless we have good models in our lives of people who have healthy relationships, we often don't realize that when behaviors are unhealthy. So talking about healthy relationships in a classroom and kind of really defining what that means makes a lot of kids, you know, think about their friendships mostly, like, you know, especially younger kids, but in other relationships that they have, yeah.
What questions do they usually have about relationships and dating and love and things of that nature?
Yeah, they, when is it okay to date? How old do you have to be to date? Am I too young to have my first kiss? Let me think of another one. The one I get a lot is, how old should you be when you have sex? Or something along those lines. What age is it okay? There is no okay age. I can't answer that question.
You say after college.
Yeah, well, and that's really, you know, it's really a question about what's healthy of an individual, and that's such a case-by-case basis.
Right.
So I try to break it down like that, like thinking about your own personal behaviors, your own personal reasons for wanting to do that, and think really about, you know, what are the consequences here? What is the responsibility I'm taking on?
And you told us some of the questions they have, the unusual questions they have about sex. What are some of the more unusual questions you've gotten about just love and relationships? Or are they pretty on the nose? Like, what age is appropriate? And do they ever ask, like, how do you know when, I mean, I haven't figured out, how do you know when you're in love and things like that?
You know, I think I don't usually get deep questions like that. But and that doesn't mean I won't.
Maybe we can talk after the show.
Or we can talk right now, either way.
But I try to really focus it on healthy behaviors, like how does this person make you feel? Do you feel like you are changing yourself in a way that is not a positive way? You know, and I try to, I have this activity that we do with young folks, which is giving them very specific scenarios, like, is this scenario healthy? And they're really common ones. Okay. And then they have to decide if it's healthy or not. And one of the ones that drives me crazy, and I know our Louisville educator said this to me too, because she gets the same response, is that the scenario of your partner tells you, like, what you should or shouldn't wear. Mm. Is that healthy or unhealthy?
My knee jerk is no. It's not, that's not healthy.
Right. I mean, someone telling you what you should wear is not a healthy thing, right?
But on a more practical note, it depends on what they're wearing a little bit. I mean, it's going to be fully, fully clothed.
If it's parachute pants, then you might have.
No, absolutely not. Sleeveless shirts, probably. No. Pattern ties with pattern shirts is just not.
Hey, you can.
Not acceptable.
That's situational.
That's situational.
I'll fight you on that one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, generally, when we get,
I don't know how many times
of,
I've been told you're not wearing that. Personally.
Well, maybe you haven't been in a healthy
relationship.
Maybe I'm not
in a healthy relationship.
Yeah, you might need to.
We need to talk after the show.
Sure. Well, I mean, especially for young people, right, and teens, and dating relationships, we're looking at controlling behaviors, right? So that is a situation where no one has the right to tell you what to wear, right?
No.
So that is. But the response we always get is, "Well, what if they're just trying to protect you?" I'm like, let's talk about that, isn't it? Yeah, so it's really surprising. And healthy relationships is one of those things that's really difficult to talk about because we, it's not difficult in terms of, you know, the programming that we have. It's difficult in terms of the wide range of responses that we get. And also, we don't have spaces where we see healthy relationships modeled in our culture very often, you know.
Or if we do, it's totally unrealistic and birds chirping and rainbows forming.
Yeah. I mean, really, you just get lucky and have somebody in your life who has a healthy relationship, or you don't. And that's how you learn about it.
Do you teach people, especially, I think, with boys, what constitutes consent?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Consent is definitely in the programming that we do.
No means no, and stop means no, and things like that.
Yeah. The way I like to teach it is, we need to shift the conversation from, that person never said no, to, well, I never heard a yes, so I stopped, right? Because consent is clear, enthusiastic, willing, yes. Mm-hmm. And if you're not clear, if you're not sure, ask, right?
Right.
So we go through some scenarios generally in programming that kind of make kids think really specifically about what consent looks like, how to ask for consent. And I think it's a really important conversation to have.
Especially for young teens and ones just starting to date, I think that would be extremely important. Or honestly, men who are in college, college age. And
it's important for children, too. I mean, think about, you know, telling young children, I mean, unfortunately, we do have folks who take advantage of young children. Yeah. Telling young children, you know, it's not okay for anyone to touch you here, but mommy, when she's doing, you know, when she's giving you a bath, or, you know, give the scenario, right? In those situations, teach consent from a very young age. And this is when we talk about sexuality through the lifespan, you know, it starts at infancy. And if when kids realize that they have autonomy over their bodies, that they are much more likely to have consensual relationships as they age. Yeah. So,
and there's also a legal age for, exactly, for consent, where you just can't give it legally. Do you find yourself teaching any classes for younger children, stranger danger and things like that? Or?
I personally haven't. Our programs have touched on that before. Our previous educator did some elementary school programming that really focused on exactly that, and like naming body parts and that kind of thing.
You're listening to Bluegrass Bios on WLXL 95.7. Our guest today is Elizabeth Perkins, not the actress. What was your official title? Educator at Planned Parenthood of Indiana in Kentucky. And where are you guys located in Lexington?
Our health center is at 268 Southland Drive.
And that's right near the train tracks, or the yes, bridge with the train.
Yeah. Yes. Willie's Locally Known is opening up a location right across the street.
Yeah.
Right across in our little shopping center area. So that's another landmark.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what was your, there was an anonymous
text line,
and that is 502-354-8336.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you guys are on Facebook.
And Twitter.
And Instagram.
And Instagram.
Safe Sexperts. Follow them on Instagram. Elizabeth, we want to thank you for coming into the studio today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, is there anything else you wanted to add?
You know, I don't think so. I think I'll just say, you know, our phone number for folks who want to call the health center. It's 859-252-8494.
Now, Elizabeth is considering coming on volunteering for the station, right? So, am I breaking news?
Yeah, you are. I don't know. I'm thinking about it. It could be a cool thing.
Like you said, you're just one person, right?
I am just one person.
But one voice can speak loud through many speakers.
Yeah, okay. That is true.
There we go.
You're selling me on it.
We'll be back in just a minute on WLXL Lexington Community Radio. Back on Bluegrass Bios on WLXL Lexington Community Radio. Well, we've learned a whole lot today, guys. first of all, we've learned where you can go if you want to adopt a cute little puppy or kitty and bring it to your house, or if you just want to donate or sponsor, and you can go to KentuckySave.org for that. We've also learned, me personally, where pimples come from. So that was enlightening. And what not to do with Mountain Dew. So there you go. We're still in studio with Elizabeth Perkins. She's going to take the floor right now to fill in the gaps on their program information. Take it away, Elizabeth.
Sure. I just wanted to mention our health center services. We focus a lot on education, and our health center is really you know, the bulk of what we do in Lexington. So I wanted to make sure that we talked about our health center services. So folks can come to us with or without insurance, English, Spanish speaking, non-English speaking, and we will see you. Our services that we offer are birth control, mostly, and STD testing and treatment. Those are the main reasons folks come to see us. But also we provide pregnancy testing, options counseling, pap smears, breast exams, HPV vaccines. And I want folks to know that we do all that stuff in the community. We're open 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And please if you have been putting off your pap smear for a while, give us a call. We'll do it for you. Or if you need some birth control, whatever the situation is, please reach out to us.
Again, their location is 268 Southland Drive, Suite 120, right across from Willie's locally known, across or next to, nearby. And their website is www.ppink.org. The phone number is 859-252-8494. Their anonymous text line is 502-354-8336. They have a Facebook at Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky, and they have an Instagram, Safe Sexperts. Is that all? Is that a, I think I got, that was all of it, right?
We are all over social media, yes.
All right, good to go. Well, we're happy to have you in today. Thank you for the education.
Hopefully, anytime.
Hopefully we'll keep on spreading it. All right, guys. I think that's going to do it for this week.
Yeah.
Same bad time, same bad channel next week. All right.
Yes.
This is Bluegrass Bios on Lexington Community. Coming up next is...
Help Local.
Help Local. Thank you. With that is a little local help. Thanks, Lex.
I got you.
With Mary Lynn Houlihan. So stay tuned for that.